who target Catholics. There has been anti-Christian sentiment, but it's on a very small scale, but not to the extent where people were being killed.
Multiple deadly explosions kill hundreds in Sri Lanka. It's Monday, April 22nd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find our program and much more on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, the U.S. view of negotiations with North Korea remains steady. Money-making Bangladeshi women changing lives. The Mueller report divides U.S. politicians. The earliest molecule. Students reach for space. It's all on today's VOA Asia. In the deadliest violence in Sri Lanka in a decade, multiple explosions ripped through churches and luxury hotels on Easter Sunday, leaving more than 200 dead and more than 400 others wounded. Sri Lanka has imposed a curfew effective immediately and blocked access to major social media and messaging apps to prevent the spread of misinformation and rumors in the wake of the blasts. Marcus Harton brings us this report from Anjana Pasricha in New Delhi.
The first six blasts that began around 8:45 local time were coordinated and claimed most of the fatalities, while two smaller blasts took place several hours later. The capital, Colombo, where three major hotels and one church were targeted, bore the brunt of the mayhem. Christian groups have said they face increasing intimidation from hardline Buddhist monks in recent years. However, such harassment is on a relatively minor level, says Jahan Pereira, who heads the National Peace Council in Colombo.
Who target Catholics? There has been anti-Christian sentiment, but it's on a very small scale with regard to these little conversions that are happening in different localities, but not to the extent where people were being killed.
Condemnation of the deadly bombings came in from leaders across the world, including U.S. President Donald Trump. For reporter Anjana Pasricha, this is Marcus Harton, VOA News, Washington.
Officials say seven people have been detained in connection with the blasts. The Associated Press quotes a security official as saying two of the blasts may have been carried out by suicide bombers. Authorities say one of the churches, St. Anthony's, and all of the hotels hit by the first blasts were in Colombo. There has been no immediate claim of responsibility for the attacks. U.S. President Donald Trump tweeted, quote, "heartfelt condolences from the people of the United States to the people of Sri Lanka on the horrible terrorist attacks on churches and hotels. We stand ready to help." Several world and religious leaders condemned the deadly explosions. Dozens of foreigners, British, Dutch, and American citizens are believed to be among the dead. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo condemned the blast in the strongest terms and confirmed U.S. citizens were among those killed. He said, "We stand with the Sri Lankan government and people as they confront violent extremism and have offered our assistance as they work to bring the perpetrators to justice." The World Jewish Congress denounced the attack as heinous and appealed for zero tolerance to those who use terror to advance their objectives. Pope Francis expressed closeness to the Christian community struck by the attacks in Sri Lanka on Easter Day. In his Easter message, he also prayed for peace in Syria, Yemen, Libya, and South Sudan. The pontiff addressed tens of thousands of pilgrims gathered in St. Peter's Square from the central balcony of the Basilica. Sabina Castelfranco has more for VOA.
Under grey skies, but in a St. Peter's Square filled with flowers, Pope Francis, dressed in white vestments, celebrated Easter Mass in front of tens of thousands of faithful and tourists. At the end of the Mass, the Pope gave his traditional message and blessing to the city and to the world. His last words before he wished everyone a happy Easter were for the people of Sri Lanka, struck, he said, by the serious attacks on Easter Day, which brought mourning and pain in some of the churches and other sites in the country. He said he learned the news with sadness and expressed closeness to the Christian community gathered in prayer. Earlier in his message, the Pope said, "The resurrection of Christ is the principle of new life for every man and every woman, for true renewal always begins from the heart, from the conscience." Yet Easter, the Pope added, is also the beginning of the new world set free from the slavery of sin and death. The Pope's first thoughts went to the people of Syria, victims of an ongoing conflict to which we risk becoming ever more resigned and even indifferent. He urged a new commitment for a political solution that will respond for the hopes for peace and confront the humanitarian crisis. The Pope's thoughts also turned to the people of Yemen, especially the children, exhausted by hunger and war, and to the situation in Libya.
Le armi cessino di insanguinare la Libia.
The Pope said, may conflict and bloodshed cease in Libya, where defenseless people are once more dying in recent weeks and many families have been forced to abandon their homes. Pope Francis urged the parties involved to choose dialogue over force and to avoid reopening wounds left by a decade of conflicts and political instability. The Pope also prayed for peace in other parts of the African continent, which he said is still rife with social tensions, conflicts, and at times violent forms of extremism that leave in their wake insecurity, destruction, and death. He mentioned Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, Nigeria, and Cameroon, but he also spoke of Sudan, which he said is presently experiencing a moment of political uncertainty.
Possa aprirsi una nuova pagina della storia del paese.
Referring to the recent spiritual retreat held with South Sudanese leaders in the Vatican, the Pope expressed the hope for a new page open in the history of that country, in which all political, social, and religious components actively commit themselves to the pursuit of the common good and the reconciliation of the nation. The Pope also mentioned the crisis in Venezuela and the situation in Nicaragua, where he expressed hope for a peaceful, negotiated solution.
Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
We invite you to read more on our top story as it continues to develop by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia and the VOAnews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now when you visit VOAnews.com. More than 200 dead in Easter blasts on Sri Lankan churches and hotels. North Korea says Bolton call for denuclearization a sign of dim-sighted. How Vietnam quietly built up 10 islands in Asia's most disputed sea. China's political system helps advance its artificial intelligence. China to show new warships as Beijing flexes military muscle on Navy anniversary. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo dismissed a statement from a senior North Korean foreign ministry official saying that the country would no longer want to deal with him if dialogue with the United States resumes. Pompeo said he is still in charge of the U.S. negotiating team and that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has promised to denuclearize half a dozen times. The exchange comes amid a flurry of diplomatic activity with Russian President Vladimir Putin set to hold a summit with Kim Jong-un. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports from the State Department.
Nuclear negotiations between the U.S. and North Korea have stalled since a February summit between Kim and President Donald Trump ended without a deal. North Korea's official KNCA news agency quoted a senior foreign ministry official saying, "I wish our dialogue counterpart would not be Pompeo, but another person who is more careful and mature in communicating with us." After meeting with his Japanese counterpart at the State Department Friday, Pompeo brushed off the report.
"Nothing's changed. We're continuing to work to negotiate. I'm still in charge of the team. President Trump's obviously in charge of the overall effort, but it'll be my team."
Amid the diplomatic impasse, South Korean President Moon Jae-in is pushing for another inter-Korean summit with Kim Jong-un to revive the nuclear talks. Analysts say the U.S. would welcome this. Dennis Wilder of Georgetown University.
I think this is a moment where actually the Trump administration is eager to have Moon play a role. Because since the summit in Hanoi, the North Koreans really have gone silent in the American channels. The New York channel, other channels are not really operating right now.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is set to meet Russian President Vladimir Putin for the first time next week. Kim's father, Kim Jong-il, visited Russia twice, meeting with Putin in 2002. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
Happening now in Asia, Afghanistan and Pakistan have jointly inaugurated a 200-bed state-of-the-art hospital in Kabul, one of three major healthcare facilities being built and entirely funded by Islamabad as it contributed to the reconstruction efforts in the war-ravaged neighboring country. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us and hope you're doing well as we begin a new week on VOA Asia. The UN Refugee Agency calls a new training project in Cox's Bazar a potential game changer for local Bangladeshi and Rohingya refugee women who are learning potentially money-making skills. The UNHCR, which is supporting this project, has teamed up with a local NGO, the Aisha Abed Foundation. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The program aims to provide income opportunities to hundreds of impoverished women by teaching them skills in craft production. The project, which began in February, is now being scaled up. The UN Refugee Agency says the goal is to train 500 women by the end of the year. Half that number will comprise Rohingya refugee women, and the other half will be women chosen from among the Bangladesh communities hosting them. The UNHCR reports the women will receive a small stipend during the training period. If the project is successful, it says it hopes to expand it to include hundreds more women. The camps in Cox's Bazar hold more than 750,000 Rohingya refugees, most of whom fled to Bangladesh to escape violence and persecution in Myanmar in August 2017. UNHCR spokeswoman Liz Throssell agrees the number of women enrolled in the training project represents only a tiny fraction of the vast refugee population. But she tells VOA the worth of the project should not be based on numbers alone.
Small numbers, yes, but you have to start somewhere. It is providing income sources to these women. It is providing training. And as we've underscored, we are hoping that this will be expanded. So it is offering income sources both for the local community and for the refugees.
Throssell says the local and refugee women are being taught different skills. She says local Bangladeshi women are learning silkscreen, block printing, and tailoring techniques. The refugee women in the camps, she says, are being taught to produce a variety of hand-sewn embroidery pieces. She notes most of the Rohingya refugee women in the program are widows or single-mother households aged between 18 and 40. None, she says, have had any previous sewing experience. The items produced by the women will be sold in one of Bangladesh's best-known retail outlets. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coming up, how the Mueller report is playing out in U.S. politics with the upcoming race for the White House already in full swing. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news from VOA Asia, the U.S. has begun a multi-million-dollar cleanup of an airbase in Vietnam that the U.S. used during the Vietnam War to store the highly toxic chemical Agent Orange. The U.S. sprayed 80 million liters of the defoliant over South Vietnam between 1962 to 1971 to deprive the communist forces of tree cover and food. There's more on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, and as political posturing begins for the 2020 U.S. presidential election, Democrats in the U.S. Congress have formally demanded a full, unredacted copy of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report on Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election. Release of the report has split Washington and much of the country into two camps. Republican supporters of President Donald Trump, who say he was cleared of wrongdoing, and Democrats alarmed by the numerous instances of possible obstruction of justice involving the president outlined in the report. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on the political fallout from Washington.
Following the release of the Mueller report, President Donald Trump greeted excited supporters in Florida. "The president has a lot to be happy about," says spokeswoman Sarah Sanders.
"There was no collusion, which is what the entire investigation was supposed to be about."
Trump says the Mueller report exonerated him both on the question of collusion with Russia and on the issue of obstruction of justice.
"This should never happen to another president again. This hoax, this should never happen to another president again."
But on the issue of obstruction, the special counsel's report tells a different story, detailing numerous attempts by Trump to influence the investigation. Trump's actions may not result in legal action, but they are troubling, says California Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff.
"They are unquestionably dishonest, unethical, immoral, and unpatriotic, and should be condemned by every American. That is not the subject of vindication. That is the subject of condemnation."
For some Democrats, the contents of the Mueller report are enough already to warrant impeachment proceedings against the president, including Congressman Al Green of Texas.
"Mr. Mueller has done his job. It is now time for Congress to do its job."
But for Trump supporters like Rich George in Michigan, the results of the Mueller probe have lifted a cloud hanging over the White House.
"Now that he's been, in my mind, exonerated by this very expensive investigation, he's super free and clear, in my mind."
What happens next is up to Congress, says former independent counsel Robert Ray.
"Where do we go from here? The only other place to go is an impeachment proceeding, and the question then will be, as a political matter, whether Democrats are prepared to travel down that road."
Democrats are split on whether to impeach Trump, but they do appear committed to holding him accountable, says analyst David Abraham.
"How much shifting in popular sentiment will result from this is hard to say, but our leaders in Congress and elsewhere have an obligation to the people of the United States to pursue this until the truth is fully revealed."
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
The report and how voters see the conclusions will undoubtedly be part of the upcoming 2020 presidential election campaign, says Jim Kessler.
"Russia is not going to take them out in this election. It's going to be on more traditional things. And the Democrats need to nominate somebody who can beat Donald Trump, which is probably someone who's more in the pragmatic progressive area than in the far left area."
For the moment, Trump is content to take a victory lap and celebrate on Twitter. But the lingering questions about obstruction of justice are likely to follow him all through next year's presidential campaign. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
This news from VOA Asia. Sri Lankan officials say more than 200 people have been killed, hundreds injured, in a series of Easter Sunday explosions at churches and hotels. Officials say 7 people have been detained in connection with the blasts. The story is evolving. Get the current developments with a visit to VOA Asia Facebook. See and share the stories you like. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, we go back to where everything began, at least we think, as VOA's Rick Pantaleo takes a moment to explain.
This is Science in a Minute.
A
Until the stars began to form, the only atoms in the early universe were mostly of hydrogen, some helium, and trace amounts of lithium and beryllium. Scientists theorize that about 100,000 years after the Big Bang, elements of helium and hydrogen atoms formed the first molecule in the universe, helium hydride. While many think the molecule should exist in parts of our universe, it was never detected until recently. In a new study published in the journal Nature, scientists say they were able to detect the signature of the first molecule in the universe in a planetary nebula 3,000 light years away near the constellation Cygnus. The discovery was made by the scientists who used sophisticated instruments that were aboard NASA's Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy, or SOFIA, the world's largest airborne observatory. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
For some, the launch of a rocket into space to resupply the International Space Station has become a routine mission. But for a group of students working with the Adler Planetarium in Chicago, it's an historic moment marking the achievement of a lifetime. Our story lifts off from Chicago, where VOA's Kane Farabaugh has more.
19-year-old college student Fatima Guerra will be the first to admit she's into some really nerdy stuff.
Like, up there, nerdy.
Way up there, nerdy, in fact. All the way up into space. Guerra is an astronomer in training, involved since high school with a small project at the Adler Planetarium with big goals.
So our main goal was to see if the ozone layer is getting thinner and by how much, if there's like different parts of the Earth's atmosphere that's getting thinner because of the pollution.
A small electronic device called ThinSat gathers the data to shed light on these questions. Designed to orbit the Earth, the device was not developed by highly paid engineers, but by Chicago area students like Guerra.
We focused on coding the different parts of like sensors that the ThinSat is composed of. So we coded so that it can measure light intensity, pressure.
Yeah, this stuff is very nerdy.
Jesus Garcia is a systems engineer for the Adler Planetarium's Far Horizons project and oversees the work of the students developing ThinSat.
Many of the students who gain these opportunities are not typically from under-income or minority students. In fact, here at the Adler, we have students who are minorities, who have been faced with challenges of not having opportunities presented to them. And here we are presenting a mission where they are collaborating with us, scientists and engineers, to work on our very first mission that's going to space.
When NASA's Antares rocket, built by Northrop Grumman, blasted off from the coast of Virginia on April 17th, it wasn't just making a resupply mission to the International Space Station. On board was ThinSat, the culmination of work by many at the Adler, including Fatima Guerra, who joined the Far Horizons team as a high school requirement that became so much more.
The requirement can really become like a life-changing opportunity, and you don't even know it. It's really exciting to see that my work is going to go up into space and help in the scientific world.
It is also exciting for her parents, immigrants from Guatemala, who can proudly say their daughter helped build a satellite orbiting the Earth.
They are really excited, especially when I told them that it might become like a worldwide type of news, and I'm going to be a part of it. They were really proud, and they were calling my family over there and like, oh, she might be on TV. It's something that they feel really proud of me about for achieving.
Long after ThinSat's work is done, Guerra will still be known as a member of a team that put the first satellite developed by a private planetarium into space. She says her friends don't think that's nerdy at all. Kane Farabaugh, VOA News, Chicago, Illinois.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Many of you have been listening on PSU Radio, Patani FM, 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University in Thailand. We're glad you were with us today. Thanks for listening. You can also find us on iTunes and SoundCloud, VOA Asia Facebook, and of course our website, that's voanews.com. We also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Zainab Abdel-Rahman, Managing Editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.